T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Been a lot of discussion, as you know, over the last couple of days about the NFL draft and what the Falcons did or did not do in the draft as far as it relates to this year's team. And there have been a lot of people that have weighed in on what they thought the Falcons did or did not do. One of those is a NFL writer for Yahoo.com, Eric Edholm, who has an opinion that's not very high in the Falcons. He's probably not alone. There are a lot of people like that. But we decided to reach out to him to talk to him about his opinion of what the Falcons did, and we invite him onto the show now, Hugh, on the waveforward.com hotline.
Good morning, Eric. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. It sounds like you guys have been licking your chops to get your hands.
No, wait a minute. First of all, Eric, I am not. I don't have beef with you. That would probably be my co-host, John Freaky.
Okay,
I'm more than anything, I'm just curious. Why did you give the Falcons such a low grade?
Yeah, I thought they just sort of reached some positions. And first of all, Chris Lindstrom was one of my favorite players to watch in the draft process. I really liked him. I know some of the folks from the Boston College staff, and you know, the Lindstrom name is like royalty there. I mean, I think every relative, any male Lindstrom, I think, has ever played in the program. But, you know, for him to come in as a 245-pound player, you know, get thrown into the mix right away, hold his own as best he could, and then develop into one of the best interior linemen in college football, that was impressive. But I had him as my number 32 overall prospect. I mean, I didn't, you know, in hindsight, maybe I would have bumped him up into the high 20s or something. But, you know, I mean, I think he's going to be a really solid player for a long time. I didn't have as much issue with that pick. Caleb McGarry, I think, comes with more risk. And I'll be curious to see what their plan is for him. But, you know, playing on turf against speed rushers, and we saw it against Auburn. We saw it against, you know, some of the other teams in the Pac-12 with better pass rushing teams. So just seemed like he struggled. He has some shorter arms for as big as he is. And, you know, just didn't love his work as a pass blocker. So, again, it's not that I despise their draft or anything. I just didn't have as much sort of optimism as I did with some other teams' classes.
And what grade eventually did you give the Falcons?
I think a C. I think it was either a C or a C minus. And, you know, that was definitely in the lower five or six teams. But, you know, it was hard for them to watch what I felt like was the strength of the draft. I thought the strength of the draft was somewhere between, you know, the 25th or 30th pick down to about the 70th or 80th pick. And they didn't have any choices in that range except for McGarry trading up into that spot. So, you know, they came back in round four, and Kendall Sheffield, you know, I feel bad because he tore his pec at the combine. I was actually there. I watched it. So, but he was already kind of a project to begin with, and then you add the injury to it. So, you know, sort of fourth round felt a little early, and it was just really that missed opportunity there. I really love the John Kaminsky pick. I think he's going to end up being a kind of a Rob Ninkovich type of player. I mean, I could see him being that kind of energy guy off the edge. So he was one of my favorite choices they made.
What do you make of running back Kwadwo Olison? You know, there was a lot of people here that felt like you should have gotten Elijah Holyfield with that pick, but we got Kwadwo Olison. What do you feel about him?
Yeah, it's a really interesting argument putting against Holyfield. Obviously, people there kind of know his story and everything. And I was a big Holyfield fan. I think he's got some Chris Carson-like ability. I could see him, you know, he signed with the Panthers. We'll see if he sticks there. But I actually liked, you know, Holyfield better than the guy they took in round five in Jordan Scarlett. So, Kwadwo Olison, I mean, I'll tell you what, people who were around that program loved what they had. I mean, he's a big back. Would be a nice compliment to what they have with Freeman and Ito Smith, maybe more, you know, shifty, short space guys. So, I mean, most people I talked to before the draft, and again, it's, you know, I mean, they could be wrong too, but most people had him in kind of that fifth, sixth, seventh round. So again, not a colossal reach. They got him, I think, in the middle of round five. So it remains to be seen. I probably could have done a little more work on him, but what I saw, I liked, didn't love, I would say.
Eric Edholm is an NFL writer for Yahoo.com. Didn't love the Falcons draft, and again, he's not alone. Eric, in town, the big beat writer for the Atlanta Falcons, D. Orlando Leadbetter gave the Falcons a D for what they did in the first round and a C-minus overall. So, you know, you're kind of in line with what he said about the draft yesterday. So there are people that are wondering. But this is the thing with the draft, Eric. We don't know. Is this 2012 or is it 2016? For the Falcons, 2012 is when they went heavy into their offensive line, and with their first two picks, they took Peter Konst and Lamar Holmes, and it turned into a disaster. 2016, they went heavy into the defensive side of the football and ended up with a very controversial at the time pick in Keanu Neal, and then took an undersized guy in Deion Jones that a lot of people didn't like, got a C-plus from one of the major places, and then later on last year, they went back and regraded it as an A-plus. Considering what the Falcons did. See, you know, the problem is you don't know for a couple of years what you've got, good or bad.
It's funny you mention that, because I actually started writing a piece last night, because that was the reaction I got on Twitter. You know, you can't judge a draft for 3 or 4 years. And I said, you know, you're right, but the people sort of demand something, right? I mean, that's why we're talking about it here. That's why everybody kind of wants to look at what everybody, how everyone grades the different teams' drafts. So, you know, I see it from both perspectives. I think there is some value in sort of saying, all right, here's where I had the players graded. Here's where they landed. This team got good value. This one didn't. This team reached for that spot, whatever. And, you know, you could take the same player and put him on a different team. I just did Kansas City Radio, and, you know, with a local angle here, and Mecole Hardman, I don't know if there was a better spot for him to land it. You know what I mean? So it does matter where you go. So I think there is some analysis of that is apt now. But I started writing that piece looking back at what I thought of the 2016 draft. And I must have been on the influence of something, because all the good teams' drafts I hated, all the bad teams' drafts I seemed to kind of like. So there's merit in what you're talking about. I was not crazy about Keanu Neal in the first round. I thought Deion Jones would be a good coverage linebacker, but I didn't know he would be a three down guy. So look, I'm as wrong as anybody sometimes. And I blame it on my kids. They were, I had 1 year old twins at the time. I was never sleeping back then. So I got to blame it on something.
Hey, you know, you could always blame it on the kids. Now here in Atlanta, there was a story written by Orlando Leadbetter that basically said that Caleb McGarry was a little socially awkward. Have you heard anything about that or anything negative about Caleb McGarry, just following up what D-Lay wrote about?
Yeah, I saw the story. I hadn't heard those words specifically. You know, I mean, I had some people say, look, he's a good kid. He was, you know, at one point homeschooled. If you know some of his backstory, you know, the family's residence burned down and they had to kind of rebuild things. And, you know, he lived in a real small community. He was kind of isolated a little bit. So, you know, I've met people who, when they were young and you know, grew up in those type of situations and started meeting people of, you know, different religions, different races, different life experiences, they may have been a little bit, like the words used, socially awkward, those sorts of things. So he's still a young man. I mean, that's the biggest thing we have to talk about here. And you know, I've met players, you know, either as college seniors or, you know, going into the first year of the NFL, and they look completely overwhelmed with city life or being around a NFL program and that sort of thing. And it takes them a couple of years to kind of mature. Heck, it took me till my mid-20s or late-20s till I felt comfortable in that kind of environment. So every player is going to have that kind of growth and that experience factor. Some are ready for it, some are not. So we'll see. We'll see if it's a factor at all and whether, you know, there's anything to what the anonymous scout said.
Eric Enholb of Yahoo Sports NFL writer with John and Hugh on Sports Radio 92 on the game as we kind of reflect from a national perspective on the NFL draft. You mentioned you were on Kansas City Radio talking about Mecole Hardman. What's going to happen with the Chiefs, Eric, and Tyreek Hill, in your estimation?
I think they cut him, and I think it could happen today, tomorrow, very soon. I mean, you know, they're still kind of in the evidence-gathering, information-gathering process, and let's put it this way. I don't know that they make that pick where they did. Was it number 56 overall or 54 or whatever it was? I don't think they make that pick if they don't feel like something was about to happen. I think it's leaning that direction. So, you know, obviously the Chiefs knew what they were getting into when they drafted him. They drafted him in the fifth round, the player who'd been, you know, kicked out of Oklahoma State. Yeah, tried to rebuild his image for the 1 year and after transferring. major questions, though, obviously, about his character, given the circumstances of, you know, the incident involving his then-pregnant girlfriend. You know, major, major question marks from a lot of other teams. So they took a risk, and they're paying for it now. And as great a talent as Tyreek Hill is, especially after they brought on Frank Clark as well, who had a domestic dispute as well in his past.
And Kareem Hunt.
And Kareem Hunt, you know, and had to deal with that. You know, this is catching up to him a little bit. And I think it would not be shocking to see that result in the coming days.
It's going to be interesting to watch that. One other quick question as you start to look forward here, going to be a big quarterback draft next year. You know, here in you know, we got Tua to, you know, one side of us and Jake Fromm to the other. These guys could be, you know, top five picks, could they not?
They could be, yeah. I mean, obviously, I think there's maybe a little bit more volatility for Jake Fromm's stock than there is Tua's, in the sense that, I don't personally think Tua Tagovailoa is guaranteed to be the number one pick like some people do. There's a lot at stake here this season. I mean, I know he's got outstanding wide receiver talent. You know, he's got other players around him, Najee Harris and whatnot. I mean, good offensive linemen, et cetera. He should be in good shape. But I do think Fromm has kind of this, you know, we could see him vault to it. I think he's good enough. He's got some real high-end talent. But we also saw some low points towards the end of the season, you know, in the Bama game and, you know, various points throughout the year where you said to yourself, is this a franchise quarterback we're seeing in the making here? Maybe, maybe not. I still got to do a lot more work on him. You know, I just put a bow on this last draft, so I got my work cut out for me. But I felt strongly enough about him, and I think NFL folks do in their early looks, to think that he's absolutely in the mix for the first round, and we could be talking about somebody who ends up in the top 10. But, you know, look, Justin Herbert from Oregon went back to school. Jacob Eason in Washington, the excitement level through the roof out there. You know, there are other quarterbacks who are highly regarded. Like you said, 2020 could end up being a very, very good class and on par with what we saw in the 2018 draft.
Do appreciate it, Eric. Thanks much.
You the man.
All right, have a good day.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.